Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Thursday, June 15th. I'm Ray Graff. Joining us to answer your automotive questions is Gordon Fricke, owner and operator of Barber & Fricke Automotive Incorporated, an independent repair, auto body, towing, and used car facility in Hoosick Falls, New York. Gordon Fricke knows how to fix anything. In fact, he just fixed the mic stand in Studio A, which is very impressive. Our number is 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. Always a popular show, always best to get in early. You can also email the program, as some people have already done, voxpop@wamc.org. Voxpop, how's it coming over there? All right. It's stripped. Voxpop@wamc.org. Gordon Fricke is here. 800-348-2551. Voxpop after the news. Hello once again. Welcome back to Voxpop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. We talk automotive maintenance and repair as often as we can with Gordon Fricke, and he is here today to answer your automotive questions. Gordon is the owner and operator of Barber & Fricke Automotive Incorporated in Hoosick Falls, New York. Prior to starting his own business, Gordon worked as an automotive tech service advisor and assistant service manager, and he knows Volkswagens and Porsches and Audis and American cars and Japanese cars, too, whatever you want. Give us a call. 800-348-2551 is the number. 800-348-2551. Or you can email voxpop@wamc.org. WAMC.org, that's voxpop@wamc.org, 800-348-2551 is the phone number. Gordon Fricke, beautiful day for a drive, eh?
Very, very nice. Thanks, Ray.
What'd you drive in today?
Well, you know, I decided to get an old car out that I actually purchased new. It's the only car that I've ever purchased new. Yes. 1987 Volkswagen Scirocco 16 valve edition.
Oh, nice. How many tickets did you get on the way back here?
None today, but I have had a few in the car over its lifespan.
Is that mainly just an officer who wants to take a look at the car?
No. You know, I have heard of that happening, though.
Not usually with the Sciroccos, however.
No, and this car is red, and I didn't really choose it to be that color. It was a year-end sale, but now it's okay. I'm glad it is red.
You know what I saw on the road? I was coming back from a Little League game the other day. A Lotus. Haven't seen one on the highway in years.
The dealership that I worked at in Natick, Massachusetts, sold Lotuses in the late 80s.
Mm-hmm.
Lotus had made a comeback, and this dealership picked them up. So we had the opportunity to experience, and I actually drove one into Cambridge, Mass. The CEO of Lotus was taking some courses at Harvard Business School, advanced courses, and he needed his Lotus delivered, and I happened to be the available person to deliver the car.
Oh, that's a shame.
It was a lot of fun.
What was under the hood?
Those cars at that time had a four-cylinder turbocharged engine.
Four cylinders?
Yes, but it was a very, very light car, fiberglass body and a lot of aluminum, so the power to weight was very, very good.
And it was, this one looked like a race car.
This looked like the James Bond Lotus of those 80s, 70s, 80s. You know that went underwater?
Sure.
Lotus Esprit.
This one was newer. It did look like a race car. It had a wide rear wheelbase and no idea, but it was going pretty quick.
Yeah, they are basically race cars for the street.
This is an email that came in from Thomas at 9:24 this morning.
Wow.
He was ahead of the game. He says, I have a 2004 Ford Freestar with 220,000 miles on it. The transmission is starting to slip when it shifts into second gear. Should I have the transmission fluid changed? It's been about 80,000 miles since it was last done. Or should I just let it be and be happy that I got so many miles out of it? And that's from Tom in Rhinebeck.
Yeah, that's a good question, because as vehicles age with automatic transmissions, the question is, do you disturb the fluid? Do you flush it? Do you change it? If he has been doing that on a regular basis, of course, the level needs to be checked, which I would think has been already accomplished. But you want to make sure the level is correct.
Mm-hmm.
And if the fluid is getting dark or burnt smelling, I would get the advice of a repair shop or maybe a transmission shop. And just don't lead into that you're eager to have an overhaul, you know, for $3,000. You might want to just say, it's an older car. What do I do? You know, should I... Do you want to? Is it advisable to change the fluid or flush it or do anything? And see how they help them out.
I mean, if it's a 2004 with 220,000 miles and the answer is you got to spend $3,000, I would say so long, Freestar.
Well, exactly, unless that the rest of the vehicle is so absolutely good and he doesn't want to part with it. But, yeah, that's a big number to throw at an old car.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
This is from Chris in Cornwall. I just bought a 2017 Mini Cooper with the world's wimpiest horn, unlike my 04. Is it possible to replace the horn on the 17 without too much trouble? And that's from Chris in Cornwall.
Well, you know, those cars traditionally had nice dual-tone European horns.
Yeah.
It's a BMW product. I would be 100% sure first that one of the two horns is not working, and maybe nobody ever checked it. You know, at dealer prep, we used to do dealer preps at the dealership.
Yep.
And I can't remember always making sure the horn worked.
So, interesting.
And the car's got dual horns. So let's say one of them is just not hooked up from the factory, not working.
You'll get one tone.
You'll get one tone. And if it's the low tone, it sounds terrible.
Yeah.
It's like a wounded animal.
Very interesting.
Yeah.
Are they separately fused?
I don't know if they have their own dedicated fuse. It's possible. But he says the horn's wimpy. So that means it's getting power.
But if they
don't have individual fuses.
Okay.
Yeah, to answer that.
Our number is 800-348-2551. Gordon Fricke is our guest today, and we go to John and Canaan. John, you're first.
Oh, great. Thank you very much. Gordon, I have a 1957 Willys that has been overheating for about 2 years. So far, I've replaced the radiator, and I've had the head gasket replaced. And I don't know quite what else to do, and I'm just hoping you'll be able to give me, you know, the next five things I could check as to why the overheating continues.
Okay.
Yeah, and I think I recognize the vehicle and your call.
There's one person in the world who has one.
A 57. Do you pronounce it Willys or Willis?
Well, I called you once before over a year ago on this. So, yeah.
So I guess to go back, when you say it's overheating, and I think I asked this before, is it actually steaming or boiling past the radiator cap, or is your temperature, or is your temperature, if you have a gauge in it, is it reading higher than you think it should?
No, it's the former. It's actually boiling over.
So the reason vehicles boil over are a few. Water pump ability, the water pump's ability to move the water through the engine, all of its passages, and through the radiator to keep it cool. So, you know, adequate flow is important. And, you know, a kind of a layman's way of doing that is to touch the hoses. The hose usually leaving the top of the engine on a conventional flow is hot, and the one at the bottom is cooler. So you could check the temperature of the two hoses, and if you have a scanning thermometer, a digital thermometer that scans by a little infrared dot, go around areas of the cooling system and the engine and note the temperatures that you're receiving. And if those temperatures aren't very high, you've probably got a combustion leak that's pushing the coolant out of the cooling system, and oftentimes it is a head gasket, but it's not entirely impossible to be a crack somewhere or an imperfection somewhere. Let's say this car over its lifetime maybe sat with 2 weeks of antifreeze in there, and there's a crack in there, which sometimes are very difficult to find. So you need to have adequate flow. You need to make sure the temperature is not, you may be boiling over, but it's being pushed out by the combustion gases, and your temperature really isn't that high. So you need to see what the actual temperature of the coolant is.
May I ask a quick question about what you just said? You said you're scanning around the outside of the engine with this device?
Yep. Just get a scanning thermometer. Oh. You can get them all over the place, Home Depot type stores or hardware stores or automotive parts stores.
Yeah.
And you can take readings outside of the engine, all over the outside of the engine block, the cylinder head, the housing for the thermostat, go over the radiator. It'd be interesting to see what you've got for temperatures going on there.
And what do I learn? What should it be? What might I find?
Well, if you had pure water in there, it would boil at 212 without a pressure cap on it. But with a pressure cap, that raises the boiling point up into the low 200s. And then when you're mixed with antifreeze, it makes the boiling point a little higher. With under pressure, you could have a car running at 260 degrees and not boil.
There you go.
So there's some things to check there.
All right, John, thank you. We have to move it along. 800-348-2551 is our telephone number. Gordon Fricke is the guest. And let's go over to William. It says William's in Maine. Where are you calling from, William?
I'm calling from Wells, Maine.
In Wells. Oh, we love that area. We go to York almost every year. We love Maine. Yep. So what's up, man?
I bought a house, and the house came with a 1974 Oldsmobile Delta 88 convertible. It's been in the garage, and the latest registration I could find was 9 years ago. But the last thing the person who owned it was they put new tires on. There's some obvious things. I'm putting in new batteries. But I'm concerned, what do I do about fuel? Should I drop the fuel tank? Should I just try and drain it? And what steps would you take if this was presented to you?
Yeah, that gasoline is a big issue. And if that gas is 9 years old or older, it's going to definitely be stale unless the previous owner poured a tremendous amount of stabilizer in it. And even then, on a car that age where the tank is not perfectly vented, oxygen is going to be getting in there year-round. If you had a vessel of fuel that never saw oxygen, it would stay fresh longer. So do the smell test. Take the gas cap off and maybe shake the car a little bit so the gasoline sloshes around in the tank. If there is any in it, confirm that it's not empty. And take a smell. And if you've ever smelled rotten gas that's like out of an old lawnmower, you'll never forget the smell. It's awful.
Yeah.
In that case, then that gasoline does want to get removed from the tank. And, of course, it's going to be in the lines. And in that age car, it's a carburetor, and you may have a lot of trouble with that car getting it going, or it may not be a big deal. So if the tank is virtually empty, get 5 gallons of ethanol-free gasoline, if you can get it in your location. We can get it around here.
Yep.
I can find it.
And then I would put some fuel stabilizer in there that regenerates old fuel. Shake the tank up, and it's going to be a process of cranking it a lot to get that fuel up to the engine. And that car may start. I would try the basics first, because if it doesn't start, you're probably going to be taking it somewhere to have more work done to it to get that fuel system straightened out.
Hey, William, we have to take a break here, but we really appreciate the call. Our number is 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. Gordon Fricke is our guest, and we'll be back.
Support for WAMC comes from Grapes and Grains Wine and Spirits, East Greenbush, New York. Offering wine and craft spirits from around the globe and from local artisans, hand-picked selection of wines, single malts, and small batch bourbons, grapesandgrainswine.com. The Hyde Collection, an art museum and historic house in Glens Falls, New York, open Tuesday through Saturday, 10 to 5, and Sunday, 12 to 5, hydecollection.org. Round Lake Auditorium, New York, Marquee Productions presenting This Is Not a Test, comedic vignettes featuring a clown, a war-torn era, June 17th at 8 p.m., roundlakeauditorium.org. The Preservation League of New York State, Albany, partnering in preserving historic New York through advocacy, education, grants, and loans so our past has a future, preservenys.org. George Propane, Goshen, Massachusetts, family-owned and operated for over 75 years, serving Western Massachusetts with propane and full-service heating and plumbing installation services and deliveries, georgepropane.com. And Ashfield Stone, Shelburne Falls, Massachusetts. Quarry and fabrication used for enduring landscapes and interiors, including countertops and floor planking. Rare and wonderful native stone of the Berkshires, ashfieldstone.com.
It's Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff here, and the automotive expert on board today is Gordon Fricke, and the email is voxpop@wamc.org. And Gordon, before we get back to the phones, a few emails here have come in. This one's from Will. My 2002 Civic keeps burning out coils. What's with that?
Wow.
What, first of all, what's a coil?
Well, he's referring to the ignition. What year's the car again, Ray? I'm sorry, you just threw that paper away.
2002 Civic.
Okay, yeah, ignition coil. And I think that vintage car might only have one coil, but most cars today have one ignition coil per cylinder.
Mm-hmm.
So if that car has a single coil and it keeps failing, my first question would be, what's the quality of the replacement part? Is it an absolute no-name, poor quality, something he's getting over the internet that doesn't have much of a warranty or quality? And if that's the case, get a better brand.
Mm-hmm.
But there's nothing that really would cause the coil to prematurely burn out as long as once he replaces the car, runs great, and then bang the coils out again. Contrary to that, checking wiring, make sure there's nothing that's inside the distributor touching that's intermittently.
A short.
Yeah, shorting it out. That would be my suggestion.
Okay, fair enough. This one is from Kathleen. On Monday, my 2004 Honda would not start. New battery, everything seems good. Made an appointment with my mechanic, but then I mistakenly tried to start it on Wednesday, got in the wrong car, and it started. When I tried it again today, it would not start. Any thoughts? Starter, alternator, computer? Thank you. And that's from Kathleen.
Yeah, good question. Need to confirm if it's not cranking. In other words, when you turn the key to the position where you want the starter to engage, is it making the starting noises, the ruh, 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 but it doesn't fire up and run? Or is it silent when you go to turn it to the crank position? If it's totally silent, could be a starter, could be the connections to the starter or at the battery. But if it's cranking like mad and not firing, now you've got a problem beyond the starting
fuel
system.
Getting
yeah, fuel pump, fuel system, spark, something like that.
Mm-hmm. Okay. This one's from Michael. Cool on you for still driving the Scirocco. I had the same car for years. Just sold my Corridor VR6 to upgrade to a TT Quattro. Oh, fancy. Now thinking of a summer car, SLK 350. Anything to watch for in an MK2, a Mark II, I guess, SLK of about 60,000 or so. That is a common problem. And that's from Michael.
Yeah. When you get into the higher end European cars like that Mercedes Benz or any of those,
yeah,
the technology is quite high, and some of the repair procedures and technical data and information you can get is difficult. And that's the stumbling block, and that's why these cars start to be worth pretty low money when they get older, because
yeah,
people get afraid of them. And if they're at the mercy of the dealer, it can get very, very costly. So I don't know any ins and outs of that car, what to watch for. I don't see that many of them, but they can be a bear to own, but they can also be phenomenal if you don't have any trouble. So it's a kind of a gamble.
This one is from Gary, who says, Gordon, what's the story on vehicles with 100,000-mile coolant or transmission fluid? Is it safe to wait that long, or should they be changed earlier? I have a 2013 Jeep Patriot coming up on 5 years old, but only has 60,000 miles. And that's from Gary in Albany.
Yeah, that's been the trend to extend the life of liquids, of fluids.
Mm-hmm.
And things have improved in terms of oil, lubricants, fluids. So the coolant can last that long for sure. It's nice to suck a sample out of the radiator or the overflow and look at it in a clear container to see if it's getting cloudy or nasty. If it still looks very nice and clear, wait till they recommend doing it.
Yeah.
Transmission is more difficult because there's no dipsticks anymore on a lot of cars. So you can't pull the transmission dipstick and look at the fluid.
Why did they do that?
I think a lot of it was originally to force a lot of people to take the car back to the dealer because they're the only ones that had the up-to-date tools and ability to check and service.
That is
them.
So unacceptable so many levels.
And that's happening. There's a lot of cars don't have engine oil dipsticks anymore.
You're kidding me.
It's an electronic measuring system that you bring up on your dashboard. And I 100% disagree with that because you should be able to pull your dipstick out and get a sample of the oil. Just a layman sample. How black and rotten and cruddy is it?
Yep, absolutely.
But that's what's happening.
All right, let's go back to the phones. 800-348-2551. Tom in Saratoga Springs. Tom, you're on.
Yeah, hi. Can you hear me okay?
Yep.
Driving. It was just a quick story. You talked about cars that would get the police to pull you over all the time. I had built one back in the early 70s. It was a custom Volkswagen with a Porsche 1500S engine, and it looked like a kind of like a mini stock race car with the wheels sticking out with no fenders.
Nice.
And I used to get pulled over all the time, so I had a regular spiel that I would give. Oh, officer, I guess you've never seen this car before, blah, blah, blah. And it was very entertaining. Never got a ticket.
Good for you.
They would typically ask me how fast would it go, and I would say, oh, the speed limit's 65. How would I know?
Good for you. Hey, man, thanks for the call. We appreciate it. 800-348-2551. Jason in Montgomery. Jason, you're on.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a 2004 Ford F-150 with a 5.4 V8 Triton motor in it. And it's making when it runs, most times it makes a noise that sounds like a diesel. And that's normally associated with the cam phaser issue that these engines have.
Yeah.
Mine doesn't seem to have that particular issue because I have no loss of power. The truck runs beautiful, has plenty of power. I've had it since about 79,000 miles, and it has 100,000 right now. Any recommendations on this noise or any other concerns that I haven't found out about it? I have a fantastic mechanic that he's gave it a very thorough check when I first got it and felt that for some reason it's making the noise, but I don't have the loss of power, so just keep doing what I'm doing with it, and if I experience any issues, we'll address them when it happens. But just curious what your thoughts are.
He's correct, and the Triton engines, particularly the early ones, some of them were very noisy, and they sounded like they were going to fail, and they didn't.
Yeah.
That cam phaser issue is and was a very big problem. My suggestion to you, and maybe you already do this, is change your oil more often than is recommended. And
Okay. Depending
on the type of driving you do, I would be changing that oil between 3,000 and 5,000 miles. And I would use full synthetic and use a high-quality filter. If it's a Ford, why not grab a Motorcraft filter? But that doesn't mean that's the filter you have to use. Just don't use the least expensive filter on the rack. Get a good quality filter for that engine. And keep driving, because you definitely don't want to go in there and do any cam phaser or timing chain work unnecessarily. It's horribly expensive, highly technical. And most of it has to go to the dealer or a specialist that has all the tooling and experience to do those.
All right, Jason.
It's a big job.
Thanks a lot for that one. Gordon Fricke is our guest. 800-348-2551, the telephone number. Rose in New Windsor. Rose, you're on.
Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Hi.
I own a 2004 Volkswagen Passat wagon. 50,000 miles, never had a problem until about a year ago. We discovered the Prindle was kind of going haywire, and due to a manufacturing defect, the rainwater was coming through the cowl into the cabin air filter, flooding underneath the passenger rug, which is where the TCM is located. I didn't know this was happening until it was too late. We opened the rug, we found inches of water, the thing's corroded. My question is it worth fixing when the dealers want almost $2,000 for the TCM? Should I go online and trust some stranger to send me a used TCM? Will Volkswagen give me any satisfaction? I mean, I don't know really what to do, and it's such a shame because it was a great car until this happened. And I just want to also say, Ray, you have a beautiful radio voice.
Oh, my gosh. Thank you. What's a TCM?
Okay, that's the transmission
control module.
Okay, yes. Now go ahead, Gordon.
So that is a computer that somebody... And I got to be careful not to insult my family and ancestors in Germany.
Or mine.
Why would they put a computer on the floor of a car? The lowest possible point in the vehicle, where most of these cars had sunroofs and the sunroof drains traditionally plugged and the cowl
I've
drains
got one
plugged.
That happened too?
Yep. And inches of water could end up on the floor and flood the computers. But be that as it may, that's what they did. So you can put a used transmission control module in that car. They have to be, if they can be matched to the transmission, that's perfect because you can drop them in and they operate. But in the case of your car, it will need to be programmed, and that has to be carried out at the dealer or a shop that has the VAG equipment to carry out the programming. I have put those modules in these vehicles before, but this was usually together with a transmission, and I got them as a matched set.
Right.
And there's also another...
I understand all the numbers have to match exactly.
Yeah.
That I understand. And three dealers couldn't even identify the problem. It's unbelievable.
They didn't notice that about the water problem, you mean?
It's unbelievable that happened to
me.
Yeah.
And would Volkswagen do anything for me, or is it just too late for that?
It's an 04.
I have a feeling the age of the car is way too old. But since they did have a water intrusion problem, that there was a, I don't know if that was a recall or a bulletin, what would it hurt?
It's on the internet. If you look on the internet, you'll see other people with the same problem.
Oh, thousands and thousands of them. What would it hurt to make a call and just say, and I really doubt they're going to help you out, but you never know.
It's worth a shot.
But I would also investigate getting a used module and seeing if you can find a shop that has the programming equipment to program, code it to the car, because that would save the car.
How tough is it to program?
It isn't, but you need the equipment to carry it out.
Not a USB or anything that you can plug right in and go?
No, it's got to plug in to the car and speak the car's language.
Which is German.
Yeah, and it's a tough program.
And some mechanics that I did approach said, some of them said it was plug and play, and some of them said it was not.
Of that era car, it probably was not, but you can find used TCMs that are not that expensive. And if you said, look, I'm going to gamble. Get me a used one. Let's plug it in and try it. You could always, it's not going to, destroy the car.
You sure?
Let's not guarantee
transmission control? All right. Well, hey, Rose, do me a favor. Call us back next time and let us know if you had any success.
And if I am going to attempt to contact Volkswagen, am I contacting Volkswagen of America, or am I making a phone call to Germany?
No. Call the 800 number that's going to connect you to Volkswagen of America. Just see what they
say.
Thank
you very much.
Hey, Rose, thank you very much. Our number is 800-348-2551. The great Gordon Fricke is our guest. And Dennis in Valencia. Dennis.
Hello. How are you?
Good.
I was just coming home and I saw a 1984 Plymouth Revenge, or it looks like a rabbit.
Revenge.
It's a little pickup.
Oh yeah, boy, they're very rare. They didn't make them for very long at all.
Revenge is the name of the vehicle?
I don't think it was called a Revenge, but it was when Volkswagen made the rabbit pickup.
Yeah.
Chrysler very quickly made one out of their, I think it was their Omni and Horizon platform.
Huh.
Was it was it a Rampage?
Oh, maybe that's what it said, Rampage, yeah.
But I know the vehicle.
Just by the side of the road, and I just saw the thing. So it must be a Revenge?
Rampage. Would be great, though, man. That would be a great name for a car.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a two-door. Like I said, it looks like a rabbit. It's a four-cylinder automatic. It had 87,000 miles on it. I was just wondering I want you to recall whatever you remember about it. What to look for, or how is it, or is it worth?
Well, it was
something to pursue.
It was made out.
It's very unusual, and it was a limited production, I would assume.
Yeah. I believe it was built out of the Plymouth Horizon Dodge Omni platform. So
it had two horsepower.
Well, no, they were okay.
Yeah.
I mean, it was a four-cylinder transverse. It was very much like the Volkswagen Rabbit. That's what they patterned the car after. The Omnis and Horizons were like U.S. rounded up rabbits.
Mm-hmm.
And
there you go.
So I would assume you can still get, basic service parts for the car, but I don't know. I never see those,
Really interesting.
It's very rare, so that's what that's what drew me to it. So it's a Omni Horizon kind of platform.
Yeah, four-cylinder, front-wheel drive, transverse engine.
Yeah, automatic. It had like a 5-foot box on it. It looked pretty neat.
Yeah, a cool concept, just never caught on.
Never caught. So there's not that many around. Yet, when's the last time you saw one or worked on one?
Oh, yeah, I don't know. Probably at a, in a magazine or something, because they made so few of them.
There
yeah.
you go. Well, good. Are you going to buy it, Dennis?
I don't know. I'm looking for it. It looks unusual enough. It's there's no rust. It's solid. The mice haven't moved into it yet.
Go look at it just for fun. Why not?
It sounds like you've already made the decision. I got to be honest with you.
Buy the car.
Oh, no. Don't analyze me.
Hey, man, thanks for the call. We appreciate it. 800-348-2551. They still make El Caminos?
No, but they did make them up into the, I think, of the 80s.
That was a cool vehicle.
Yeah. And in the early ones, 66, 67, they had a super sport El Camino. It was a 396. It was a muscle car El Camino.
Yeah. I bet that handled very poorly.
Oh, boy. Not much weight in the back.
Let's go to Steve in Pleasant Valley. Steve.
Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Hi.
Hello.
I just got back last weekend from a 1,600-mile trip in a 1965 Corvair Monza convertible.
Cool.
Wow.
And I was down in Virginia doing about 60 miles an hour on one of their four-lane highways, and the car went, and everything was gone. There's no power. All the idiot lights lit up. I got over to the side of the road, lifted the hood, and the coil wire had blown off the top of the coil. Put it back on, got in the car, started it up, and away we went. Did the same thing about 200 miles later coming back out of Virginia. I think the car's allergic to Virginia, basically.
Could be. But
have you ever heard of a coil wire being blown off the end of the coil? Or have I got something weird and maybe I should just replace the coil wire?
Well, it does have a metal end that makes the electrical connection inside the coil. When you plug it back in, does it really snap in nice and tightly, or is it just kind of falls into the back into the coil too easily?
It clicked in.
Yeah.
But, you know, I don't know how solid a click that was.
Yeah. Here's what I would do. The end of that coil wire, if you peel the boot back, is going to be probably probably brass. It could be aluminum. But take a little pair of needle-nose pliers and expand that to make it tighter.
Ah.
Make it so it fits to make it difficult to reinsert in the coil. But leave the boot off, pulled back so you can see that thing click and bottom out as deep as it goes in the coil. And then put the boot back over it. And if you wanted some added security, you could maybe wrap some tape very neatly around the boot and the wire just to hold it 100% into the coil. And just try that. But I think the wire is just too loose and it's coming out in the heat.
All right, Steve, we have to take a break, but thank you for the call. Our number is 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. Gordon Fricke is our guest, and we'll be right back.
Support for WMT comes from Saratoga Jewish Cultural Festival, presenting Isle of Klezmos, an all-women klezmer group performing neo-traditional folk dance, mystical melodies, Yiddish swing, and retro tango, Sunday, June 18th, saratogajewishculturalfestival.org for details. The Lake George Land Conservancy, Bolton Lanning, New York, working on land protection projects that safeguard the water quality of Lake George, hiking maps, public events, and more at lglc.org. Stammel String Instruments, downtown Amherst and Poughkeepsie, providing sales, service, and rentals of violins, violas, cellos, and bows. Restorations and appraisals open Tuesday through Saturday. StammelString.com. Curtis Lumber, hosting their 8th annual Petapalooza, one-day adoption event in New York and Vermont with adoptable pets from over 80 area shelters and rescue groups. Saturday, June 17th from 10 to 3. clpetapalooza.com for details. Viva Fresh Pasta, 30 years and 30 wines by the glass, European cuisine infused with flavors of the world. Northampton, Massachusetts. Grab life by the knife and fork. VivaFreshPasta.com. And Dr. Lucy Chapik, Latham, New York. A plastic surgeon dedicated to aesthetic cosmetic surgery, fat transfers, facial rejuvenation, breast augmentation, and laser and skin care since 1996. 518-786-1700.
Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff here with Gordon Fricke and you at 800-348-2551. The email address is voxpop@wamc.org. And this one from John says, how is the freewheeling lever supposed to be used on a 1973 Saab Sonnet 3? I have no idea what the freewheeling lever is. Tell us.
A 73 Saab Sonnet 3.
Yeah.
I don't know that 100%, but I think it throws the car into neutral. That's what I'm guessing. So you can coast or tow it with the transmission disconnected. That's my guess.
Okay,
that's my
you're
guess.
You're not sure.
I'm not sure.
All right, fair enough. Our number is 800-348-2551. Let's go to Kenyon in Shrewsbury, Mass. Or is it Shrewsbury?
Hi.
Where are you calling
from? Are you
there? Yeah, where are you calling from? Shrewsbury?
Shrewsbury.
Ah,
it's
yes.
Closer to you.
No, I got that. I thought it was Shrewsbury, and that's something else. All right, you're on.
Okay. Well, I have a beautiful Volkswagen Eurovan MV. I've been driving since I bought it new in 2003. If you could still buy a new one, I would buy a new one. But it has 126,000 miles on it. And back in November, it came up with a leak, first leak it's ever had. It's totally dealer-maintained. Took it to the dealer. Dealer took a look at it, said, transmission pan is really rusted, needs a new seal. So they said, and we'll do the transmission service at the time that we have it apart. Fine. New seal, new transmission pan. I bring it home. And I don't drive it a lot now that I'm retired. I've been trying to put mileage on the car, which, you know, could be replaced, but it can't. The van can't. So it's leaking. Every time I drive it, I come home, I put a new piece of cardboard under it. It's leaking. I take it back to the dealer. Dealer says, drops the belly pan and says, well, because it has a belly pan, it's hard to tell where it's leaking from. They couldn't find a leak, they told me. They cleaned the engine, cleaned the belly pan and said, we think it was just some extra fluid in the belly pan. I bring it home. It's still leaking. I take it back. This time, they say, the mechanic who worked on it said to me, well, it appears that whoever did the transmission work overfilled the transmission fluid. This is where if you had a transmission dipstick, it would be very helpful.
Correct.
All right, so he, like, drained some off, I guess, and cleaned it all up and said, that should fix it. I get home, and the next time I take it out to drive, it's still leaking.
Hmm.
So, you know, I'm very frustrated, and I had some other things come up personally where I couldn't give him a call back in the last couple of weeks. But yesterday I had to drive it, and all of a sudden the engine check light comes on.
Oh, boy.
So, you know, I sit down, I pull out the book, I look at what that means, and it's basically God knows what. The particular light that came on is connected to the emission control system.
Right.
So that has nothing to do with the leak.
Which, of course, when I talk with the dealer, you know, God knows which piece is the issue. So now I'm, you know, took it back to the dealer this morning. I'm leaving it with them for a few days so they can try and find the problem. And I said to him when I got there, I take the cardboard with the stuff on it, and I say, okay, here it is, you know, proof. And so I said to him today when I got there, I said, you know, if it were me, I'd take the belly pan off and put fresh cardboard under it so that maybe you can target where the leak is coming from.
I'm with you.
So, you know, here we are. They've got the car. The leak has not been fixed. The second time I took it in, they charged me. The third time I took it in, they did not charge me. God knows what they'll do this time on the leak. But my concern is twofold. First, I'm concerned that perhaps if the transmission fluid was overfilled when they replaced the pan and gasket, that the pressure might have caused the new seal to leak. And who knows if they'll be honest about that.
All right, what do you think, Gordon?
Okay, yeah. You to overfill that, it would be very difficult to put that much extra fluid in there because there's quite a bit of space above the actual level. The pan that they replaced, along with its gasket or its seal, is not under any pressure to speak of.
Okay.
To answer that question, don't worry about that.
All right.
Did you didn't have any leaks before the pan and the gasket got changed?
I had a leak, and I took it in, and they said
it was the pan.
They thought the gasket for the transmission pan was leaking.
Okay. All right. I got it.
So that's what they fixed. But obviously, you know, this is now my fourth trip. It's still leaking. The material that is leaking looks the same to me.
Yeah.
Don't seem to be able to look at what is on the cardboard and have any idea where it's coming from.
Yeah. So the leak is more than likely above the pan and above the gasket, and that's where it accumulated. So what they need to do is clean the transmission, and then they need to run it. Go out for a test drive with the belly pan off of the vehicle, and then raise it back up and take a flashlight and look around there and see if there's a fresh leak coming.
Uh-huh.
And if it doesn't show up right away, park it outside running for 10 or 15 or 20 minutes. It's going to be a bit time consuming, and it's going to be on the lift two or three times. And I know that time is money, and big dealers, you know, they want you in and out of there like a rocket.
Right.
So, but it's going to be something where somebody's got to pay more attention to it. And like they suggested, leave it there for a few days and they can drive it maybe and bring it back in and then discover where the leak is.
But the emission check engine has nothing to do with that, right?
It probably doesn't. It'd be nice.
It could?
Well, if they scan it and find out, I don't know. They got to find out what the code is, because there's a lot of check engine lights that cross between different modules.
Oh, well,
you can have a transmission code that can turn on the check engine light. So that's got to be scanned, and it may have nothing to do with it. But that leak has to be dealt with a little bit more carefully.
Let's go to Lawrence on the road. Lawrence, you're on.
Hello, Ray and Gordon. Thanks for taking my call. I have another transmission I'm calling about.
Okay.
My wife drives a 2004 Lexus SUV, has about 80,000 miles. She's planning on keeping it and is looking into having some of the recommended servicing done, one of them being servicing the transmission.
Okay.
My question is it adequate to go to the local, if I can say it, like a Jiffy Lube, and just when they do the servicing, I believe they just replenish the fluid, or would you recommend going to a transmission shop where they would drop the pan? I didn't even know if they still have filters in the transmission, replace the filter if necessary, and look around,
sure,
et cetera.
Yep. That vehicle, the servicing of the transmission is a periodic drain and refill. And if that's done when it should be, there's no need to take the pan down. The filter is a pretty heavy, coarse screen mechanism, and there's not a lot of debris in the transmission normally. So I wouldn't be concerned about that, particularly on that vehicle. So the drain and refill is not that difficult. You just want to make sure that whoever does it uses the correct fluid. And usually in the case of vehicles like that, I will buy the Toyota fluid, which that's a Toyota product, and use their fluid. So it doesn't take that many liters or quarts. And then you got exactly what the factory recommends in there. But definitely have it done. Do all the maintenance that's required if you're keeping the vehicle.
Yes. Is there a drain plug like the oil pan for the transmission?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that Lexus has a drain plug, yes.
Something could be done as a do-it-yourself project then.
Yeah, vehicle needs to be level and, you know, follow the book. And that vehicle, I don't think, has a dipstick, though, does it, for the transmission?
I believe it does.
If it does, then you can
swear to it.
Right. If it does not, then you need more equipment and knowledge, and I would not do it yourself.
Oh, there you go.
But if you have the dipstick, that's the old perfect standby, because you know what the level is when you're done.
Well, Lawrence, thank you for the call. Our number is 800-348-2551. Chuck in Bearsville is next. Chuck, you're on.
Hey, hi. I have a 2008 Chrysler Pacifica, and depending on exterior temperatures, when I reach a deceleration around between 45 and 50 miles an hour, I get a high-pitched, like, whistle tone. the colder it is, the more intense, loud the tone is. Yeah, yesterday I was driving around in 85-degree weather, and I didn't hear it at all. And this, coincidentally, this all started after I had a drive shaft replaced. My drive shaft had bent, and they replaced it. And I started driving, immediately started hearing this noise. And I took it back, and they swear it's a vacuum leak of some kind, but it is coincidental that it happened right after I had it repaired.
Yeah.
I know what you mean. Those coincidences, I never buy that it's a coincidence.
Well, yeah, you know, really? Come on.
Sometimes they are, sometimes they aren't. Sometimes things are going to break when they break.
Yeah.
And if, let's say your check engine light is going to come on for a emissions-related item.
Yeah.
And you just have your brakes done, and that light comes on the next day, and that light is on for an EVAP code. It's not, you know, usually related, although our minds want it to be, you
absolutely
know?
It's located in time, very near.
Exactly. But so to go back to that drive shaft issue, it would be nice to make sure that that drive shaft is not close to contacting anything, any of the shielding or any of the brackets or the exhaust. It could be super close to it, that when you decelerate, everything moves slightly and it may be touching something.
That was my fear, that it was actually physically, you know.
Yeah, could be close.
Going to break or something.
Probably not going to break, but there could be something close to it. There's a bunch of stuff under the floor where that drive shaft, this is the drive shaft that goes to the rear of the car, correct, that they replaced?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
It would be nice to make sure that everything is perfectly free and clear in the area of that drive shaft. And if they can simulate the noise on the lift, which you oftentimes can't, then you could pinpoint it. But other than that, then start searching for a vacuum leak. But usually a vacuum leak that's audible will turn on your check engine light, indicating you got a lean condition or a leak. So
you're definitely of the mind that it could be some close quarters.
It's possible. Yeah.
Very interesting.
Especially if it did.
Go ahead, Chuck.
I was just wondering if it could be wind passing, you know. Pardon, but it's, and the weird thing is again, if it's when it was 30 degrees or 20 degrees out, it was really intensely loud.
Yeah,
I mean, almost hard to drive. And then again, yesterday, today, you know, and also if I start the, you know, my first drive of the day is worse. If I drive it for 20 minutes, the sound, you know, as it heats up, the sound decreases.
But it's only on deceleration, you said, foot off the gas,
not
coasting.
Not only on, I have to say, but, you know, most of the time it's a deceleration thing. If I'm coasting down a hill and that's always right around 45 to 50 miles an hour.
This is what I would do. Hopefully have the car where it can make the noise almost at will, and take take the guy with you, take the mechanic or somebody in the shop with you, so both of you hear it and say, this is exactly what I'm interested in.
I've done that, and they took it back in, they looked at it, they put it back up on the lift. He says he thinks it's a vacuum leak. I just don't know how hard it is to pinpoint a vacuum leak, and I don't want to sink a bunch more money into this. I just put a new starter in, and then I had to put in new power steering. You know, getting to the point where it's $1,000 at a time.
Exactly. I understand. It's how far you want to chase it and how expensive it is. Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks, Chuck. We got to move it here and get another one in before we close up shop. Kevin in Saratoga. Kevin.
Hey, how you doing, guys?
Good.
So I have a question for you, and I know this might be a little off topic, but I keep it in possession of a boat, a wooden boat. I have a question about the engine. So it is a 1943-45 Chrysler Flathead 6 Ace engine.
Yeah,
it had industrial applications. It was also used in the Chrysler New Yorker. When I got it, who I bought it from. Told me, I believe at the time, that it was a 6-volt system. It was wired for 2 6-volt batteries. My problem is in all the documentation I could find on it, some I got with the engine when it came into my possession, and some I was able to find a service bulletin. The engine is an early Ace, so maybe early 1940s, 42, 43.
Okay.
And it says in the service manual I got with it that these were made with in 12-volt positive, negative ground, 6-volt positive, and 6-volt negative ground. So is there a way I can find out ground, how this is wired, the polarity of it?
Yeah, you have to look at those two batteries and tell.
The batteries are gone. The battery holders are there, and I can see the wiring, and I can see from what I can tell it's 2 6-volt batteries wired in series.
Okay.
So I believe it's a 6-volt system, but is there a way to tell whether it's a positive ground or a negative ground?
If they're wired in series, then 2 6-volts becomes a 12-volt
system.
Right,
we only got about 10 seconds here.
Excuse me, then. I believe whichever way that it's just 2 6-volt batteries.
We're about out of time. I'm sorry to say it, Kevin, but we're out of time. So quickly, Gordon, if you have an answer.
Well, you got to follow the wires to the ground of the engine or the frame of the boat, but the size of the post determines the polarity, and the larger of the two is usually the positive, but don't take that my word on that and burn the boat up.
That's a bad plan.
Yeah.
All right, well, thank you. That'll be the last one for today. Gordon Fricke, thank you very much. Support comes from Jane Iredale, a mineral makeup company specializing in makeup that is good for the skin. Jane Iredale, retail shop at Louisa Ellis Boutique, Great Barrington, janeiredale.com. Stavros, helping people with disabilities achieve their dreams. Offices in Amherst, Greenfield, and Springfield. Stavros.org for more information. Identity Eyewear, Albany, New York, specializing in distinctive eyewear featuring new styles for 2017. Eye exams by appointment, 518-459-2638. And Real Seafood Company, Wolf Road Colony, locally owned seafood restaurant at Raw Bar, realseafoodco.com. Thanks again to Gordon Fricke for being here. Thanks to you for listening and for the great calls and the emails as well. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer. Your phones are answered by Deb Malik. Our producer is Jim Lavoulis. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, Deanna Fox joins us for a Food Friday. It's summertime. It's time for pies. Right now, though, stand by for news.